tonight is the big finale of our series on the Rambam's Hakdama LaPerek Chelek, which many of you may have actually signed up because you thought you were going to find out the answers to what happens to us after we die. And in fact, we haven't really discussed that much besides in passing the Rambam saying things kind of along the lines of, oh yeah, well, we really don't know, and you know, at best it's speculative, and things like that. But in fact, the Rambam does realize that he has to give some kind of explanation for his position after having discounted the mistaken positions and explained to us why people make mistakes when they think about these things. He has two more very important things to do in this particular work. One is to tell us his take on Yemot HaMashiach, the Messianic era, on what happens after we die, on Tchiyat HaMetim, on resurrection, on Olam Haba. We have to more carefully define all of these terms, and we will in the course of the evening. The other important thing, the essential thing, which he has to do in this work, which we, for our purposes, left off of our syllabus. It might be the topic of a different series, a different point, is the part of this work, the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek, in which he spells out the 13 principles of faith, required beliefs. The absence of subscribing to any one of them, according to the Rambam, would have you fail the OHEE, the Olam Haba entrance exam, and would lock you out of the world to come and the ultimate rewards that he spoke so dramatically about earlier in the work. Those 13 principles of faith, what were, you know, later summarized by someone else as the Animamins, the 13 Animamins. We also know it from Yigdal, from the Piyut Yigdal, which is a poetic rendition or summarization of those 13 principles of faith, again, not written by the Rambam. Those 13 principles of faith are spelled out here in this work, in the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek. Because since he's discussing Kol Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelek LaOlam Haba, all of Israel has a share in the world to come, Chutz Me, except for the following list of people, he needs to establish certain principles of belief that the true believers subscribe to, and people that are at best mistaken and at worst heretical do not believe in, and therefore they are excluded from entree into the world to come. Now again, that the 13 principles of faith we left off. Very often when people study the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek, that's their main point of interest, and they skip over everything we've done until now. Our interest this semester was to look at those introductory passages, which I think are really very essential. The discussion about how to go about thinking about reward and punishment, the discussion about how to develop and focus on proper motivation for the religious life, for the performance of mitzvot, what generally falls under the slogan of Torah Lishma, the very essential discussion of the proper manner of reading and interpreting Divrei Chazal, particularly in the Agadic realm, the realm of Midrash and Agadah, which after all serve as the main repository, the almost exclusive repository of our knowledge of what Chazal thought about these topics. But now the Rambam is going to have to discuss Olam Haba, which you'll see for the Rambam is more than one simple destination. The Rambam discussed this in a few different places. He discussed it, his first iteration of it was here in Hakdama LaPerek Chelek, and the perhaps the main source for it is the 8th chapter of Hilchot Teshuvah, which is almost the conclusion of the entire Sefer Mada, his great philosophical halachic work. And because he was misunderstood, and because he was criticized for his positions on these matters by people who either disagreed with him or misunderstood him or didn't fully understand him, he wrote an essay, as it were, called the Ma'amar al Tchiyat Hametim, the Letter on Resurrection. This is a text which is readily available also in English translation, and you could find it in various translations, in various books, where he also spells it out there. I want to tonight look at the section here in Hilchot Teshuvah, which parallels what he writes in Hakdam al Perek Chelek, but since it's a more central text, and in some ways a little clearer, I think that it will kind of give us the picture of the Rambam's eschatology. Eschatology is a word that means, you know, everything that's going to happen at the end of times. So both in terms of the personal level of what happens to us, as well as what will happen to the world. The Rambam says in Halacha Aleph of Hilchot Teshuvah, "Hatova hatzfuna l'tzadikim hi chayei olam haba." Life in the world to come is the promised reward for the righteous. Again, remember, for the Rambam, the righteous is a pretty big category. Anybody whose merits outweigh their flaws, anybody whose zchuyot outweigh their avanot, is a tzaddik. V'hi hachayim she'en mavet imahem. Life without death. V'hatova she'eni mara'a. Good without bad. Hu shekatu b'torah, l'man yitav lecha v'arachti yamim. Chazal understood that pasuk, that it should be good for you, your days shall be lengthened. Chazal learned, l'ma'an yitav lecha le'olam shekulo tov. Life that's fully good. V'arachti yamim le'olam shekulo aruch. Really long. How long? Eternal. Zehu olam haba. That is the world to come. Schar ha-tzadikim hu sheyizku le'noam zeh. Reward for the righteous is that you get entree to Olam Haba, and the punishment for the wicked is that you get cut off and you die, and when you're dead, that's it. That's you're in the abyss, you don't go any further. Like an animal. Like when the hamster dies. I don't know if you have this with your kids. In my backyard, we have like a whole cemetery of, you know, you have the hamsters, you have the goldfish. Our kids don't like the idea that the goldfish go down the toilet, which to me seems like a more natural end. So we're out there in the rain, you know, doing the whole burial thing for the hamsters, for the goldfish, for the, you know, various other pets and animals. Kids, they think, like, you know, the animals go to Gan Eden, or they go to Shamayim, or the whatever. So the truth is, it might not be necessary to explain this to your four-year-old yet, but according to the Rambam, this is not the case. According to the Rambam, you can, you know, have pets, and you can love your animals, and that's all very nice, man's best friend. But according to the Rambam, animals do not go to Olam Haba, because they do not, while they have a nefesh, they have an animus, they have an animating force that obviously distinguishes them from plants or minerals or from rocks. They do not have a neshama. They're not invested with the Tzelem Elohim. They're not invested with a rational intellect that will enable them to plug into life in Olam Haba, as he's about to explain. Halacha Bet, the Rambam says, Olam Haba ein bo guf u'gvia. Now, this is a radical statement. This is a radical statement for reasons we'll see in a second. In the world to come, you have no body, you have no physical form. The world to come, according to the Rambam, is your abstract, non-physical you. There's a lovely little pamphlet called "If You Were God," which was put out by Rav Arye Kaplan. Arye Kaplan, I assume that many of you, you know, look, there's his picture. I assume that many of you have heard of him. I assume that anybody that ever once had an NCSY connection has a copy of this book. Rav Arye Kaplan, who died tragically young, I think, sometime in the 1980s. 1983. He died at the age of 48. Was a very, very, very creative thinker, a very prolific thinker. He did a wonderful translation of the Chumash called The Living Torah, I think. And he wrote many, many books on Jewish spirituality, on prayer, on meditation, on, you know, even on Kabbalah, but this was before the cheapening of Kabbalah. On Jewish philosophy, on mitzvot, and the Orthodox Union published a lot of them. I'm sure if you Google it, you can still purchase this online, either through OU.org probably even through Amazon, called "If You Were God." So there's three short essays in this little volume. The whole volume is only 82 pages, one of them is called Immortality and the Soul. And it's a very interesting presentation of these topics. And he starts off the essay with this little thought experiment where he asks you to point, like to close your eyes and point at yourself. And most people, you know, will point to their chest. Some people, if they think a little more, they'll point to their mind, because they have a notion that, like, the intellect is the brain, that spongy mass between your ears, contains the real, you know, the real you. That's actually how it starts. The essay starts off, the first section of the essay is called "Meet the Real You." but none of this is the real me. None of these things is the real me, because the real me, my true essence, is a completely non-corporeal, non-bodily, non-physical, my personality. If I could somehow distill my personality to its essence, well, it's connected to who I am. It may be affected by, you know, this physical entity in which it's housed for these however many decades, but in Olam Haba it will be freed of all that. There's a lovely essay, a very powerful essay by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik's younger brother. It's collected. He has a collection of his essays called "The Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind." It originally appeared in Tradition. If anybody wants a copy of it, you can email me, and I can send you a copy by email. It's an essay that he wrote from his hospital bed. It may have been dictated after he had a stroke. He was a stroke victim, and for the last, you know, significant number of years of his life, he was, you know, seriously impaired, if not mostly paralyzed on one side of his body. And in the hospital, hold on one second, let me just pull it off the shelf. The essay is called A Glimpse at Eternity from a Hospital Dungeon. It's a short essay. It's only like 6 pages long. He says that the Dungeon was written in 1983. And he passed away, I believe, in 2000 or 2001. So for a significant number of years, he was in a difficult physical state. And he writes about this sense that, the stroke victim who realizes that his body is no longer responding intuitively, automatically, the way that our bodies are trained to respond. All of us that are healthy, thank God, we take it for granted. When suddenly you realize that you have this intellect trapped inside a body. So the meaning of the title, The Hospital Dungeon, he's not describing the hospital. He's describing the dungeon of his body, that his soul, as it were, is now trapped not inside this sophisticated machine called your body, which responds automatically and instinctively, but your soul is trapped inside this dungeon, which is no longer responding to your mind's commands. And this, the duality between body and mind, between guf and neshama, is at the essence of certainly of Maimonidean thought. And in Olam Haba, this notion, again, I mentioned these two essays, one by Rav Aryeh Kaplan and one by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, which kind of really give powerful voice to these ideas that we don't think about, because our life here is one in which these two components are so fused that it's difficult to think of them as disparate realms. The Rambam says that in Olam Haba, we leave the guf behind, and we are just completely non-physical, non-corporeal, and this is the way in which the Rambam had said in Hakdama LaPerek Chelek, that it's like the fish imagining fire, or the fish imagining amphibious life. It's unimaginable. It's unimaginable. We can't conceive of what that existence will be like, because our whole very way of thinking is rooted in the fact that we are in fact physical beings. But what will we be? We will be nefashot tzadikim bilvad, below guf kimalachei asherei, like the angels. Ho'il ve'ein bo gviot, ein bo lo achila ve'lo shtia ve'lo davar mikol hadvarim shegufot bnei adam tzrichim lahem. And in that world, you don't eat, you don't drink, because you're not physical. You're not physical. None of the physical components of our life will be related there. But what will it be? So it will be something else. And here the Rambam demonstrates the exact point that we spent so much time on in the last few weeks. What will it be? So he says it won't be. There won't be eating. There won't be drinking. There won't be any type of physical pleasures. You won't sleep. You won't etc. What will it be? Elat tzadikim yoshvim vatroteihem b'roshehem v'ne'enim miziv hashchina. So then he reverts to a metaphor which itself violates the literal explanation of what he's talking about. He says, what will it be? It'll be that the tzaddikim will be sitting, right? Will be sitting. Ah, he just told us that they won't be sitting, right? They won't be amida, they won't be yeshiva, because you don't have a body. How can you sit? And you're going to have a crown on your head, right? But you won't have a head to hold up the crown. So again, obviously, it's a metaphor. Nehenin miziv kashchina. That you're plugged in, as it were. You have a T1 connection? You know, the highest of the high speed connection right there to the active intellect of God. הרי נתפאר לך שאין שם גוף לפי שאין שם אכילה ושתייה, זה שאמרו צדיקים יושבים, דרך חידה אמרו. He says that this expression that I just use is a metaphor. כלומר, צדיקים מצויים שם, בלו עמל, בלו יגיע, וכל זה שאמרו את רותיהם בראשיהם, כלומר, דת שידעו שבגללה זכו לחיי עולם הבא. Wisdom, knowledge, plugged in, your intellect merged in with that of God. Now this is what got the Rambam into trouble. And the Ravid right here on the Rambam makes a critical remark. And he points out the idea that Olam Haba doesn't have a goof. Aleph Aleph means Omer Avraham. The Ravid is Rav Avraham ben David. So this is the Ravid's comment on the Rambam. It says, Divrei ha'ish hazeh be'einai krovim l'mi she'omer ein tchiyat ha'metim l'gufot ela l'neshamot bilvad. So the Ravid says this is problematic because from what the Rambam says, it sounds like he denies the resurrection of the dead. Tchiyat ha'metim, our cardinal belief, which the Rambam himself, counts as one of the 13 principles of faith. It sounds like he denies this principle. It sounds like he sides with a point of view that says that after you die, you don't come back. There is no resurrection of the dead. Because the Rambam just says, what's Olam Haba? Olam Haba is non-corporeal. So what about Tchiyat HaMetim? So he says, V'chai Roshi, he says, Oy Gevalt, Lo Hayadat Chazal Al Zeh Shehare Amru Atidim Tzadikim Shiyamdu Bilvusheihem. That Chazal said that there'll be physical resurrection, that the dead will be revived. We, you know, daven about it quite a bit. Mechaye HaMetim Ata Rav LaHoshia. So the Ravid raises this question and says, how could it be that the Rambam denies this notion of the resurrection of the dead? And the Rambam had to respond to this. And the Rambam explained the following. For the Rambam, there's a two-step process. There's what he calls the Olam HaTchia, which for some reason he downplays here. And then there's what he calls Olam Haba. According to the Rambam, this is the way it works. You die. We all die. It's the way of all the world. Hopefully we die at a ripe old age, without disease or pain or suffering. But when you're dead, you're not here anymore. You're in the ground. And in the ground, you know, you generally dissolve. But you will come back to life. When Mashiach will come, when the Messianic era will present itself, and the Rambam describes that in great detail at the end of the Mishneh Torah in Hilchot Melachim. In Hilchot Melachim, the Rambam has a section called Hilchot Melachim, the Laws of Kings, which actually deals with the kind of like the ideal political establishment of how society should be run. But he also there, since I guess he's talking about like ideal political states, politics in the proper meaning, not politics. We make a mistake when we use politics to mean, you know, in that kind of cynical way that people say, politics, to mean like, you know, who's been caught doing something improper today. But politics, you know, in the sense that the Greeks used it, that Plato used it, that Aristotle used it. Politics is the way in which society organizes and governs itself, the way in which society sets ideals for what it wants to be and what it aspires to. So the Rambam discusses politics, the organization of religious society and life. And he does that in Hilchot Melachim. But since he's there talking about ideals ba'olam hazeh, he also talks about ideals for olam haba, or at least the olam, the Yemot HaMashiach, when Mashiach will come. And he describes it at length over there at the end of the Mishneh Torah. When Mashiach will come, there will be the revival of the dead. The people that have died, that merit to be revived, will come back to life. Now, and there was this notion that, like, we do generally believe that our notions of burial, our traditions, and our laws, our halachot of burial in the ground, in contact with the earth, that the human body is sacred, is holy, and shouldn't be desecrated, neither in life and not even afterlife. This led for a lot of reasons and for many years to this notion that Jews couldn't assign the organ donor card, because you needed your organs. If you donated your organs, when it came time for Tchiyat HaMetim, you wouldn't have your heart, and you're going to need your heart again. You wouldn't have your kidneys or your livers or your cornea or anything else that you need, because you're going to come back to life. Now, this was a mistaken notion. It was a combination of different things, partially through some superstition, and partially through a notion that the idea of the sanctity of the human body, even when it's no longer alive, and the serious prohibitions against desecrating the human body, even after it's no longer alive, connected to the idea of Tchiyat HaMetim. These things kind of got merged in the popular imagination. So this is not an authentic Jewish view. It is true that the halakha does not favor autopsies, generally speaking. It is true that the halakha does not favor donating a body to science, kind of carte blanche, because of the sanctity of the body and the halakhic requirement of burial. But it is also true that it's a great mitzvah to donate organs if they have life-saving potential. And in the last number of years, both in North America and in Israel, different organizations have been founded to what they call halachic organ donation. And somebody can sign the halachic organ. I think there's an organization called the Halachic Organ Donor Society. This is in North America. They have a website. You can look them up. I think it's under the acronym HODS. In Israel, there's something called Keren Adi, Ayin Dalet Yud. And they are halachic organ donor cards, as it were, that allow you to do it and to donate your body. Because the miracle of reviving the dead is significant enough that God is able to do it whether or not you've donated your organs or not. There is this kind of midrashic notion that there's this one little bone, the loose bone, which receives its nourishment only from the food you eat on Motzei Shabbat at the Malava Malka. That's why in the Shulchan Aruch it says you have to eat the Malava Malka. After you ate all that food on Shabbat, there's an additional obligation to eat another meal, and if you don't wash, at least to have some cake or something on Motzei Shabbat. That's called the Malava Malka. And there's this notion that the Malava Malka nourishes this tiny loose bone, from which that loose bone is very hard. It doesn't disintegrate when you die, and from that loose bone you'll be resurrected. So I don't know whether Chazal meant that literally, whether there is such a loose bone, or it's a metaphorical idea. I'm not certain. But the idea is that Hashem if he's going to resurrect you, after you're in the ground a couple of years, it doesn't matter whether you donated your organs or not. You're all decayed. They're not there with you anymore. You know, we've all seen movies. You know about skeletons and bones and, alas, poor Yurik, and skulls and things like that. So, again, it's important to debunk these kinds of popular misconceptions. So for the Rambam, the resurrection of the dead, this miraculous occurrence, the people that are dead will come back to life. And that period of time, during Yemot HaMashiach, the Messianic era, according to the Rambam, is a very, very this-worldly experience. Besides the pretty remarkable occurrence that the dead will come back to life, it'll be this world. It'll be a physical world. You'll eat, you'll drink, you'll be married. There are questions. People discuss this. Achronim discuss this question if you were married and then you became widowed and then you got remarried and then you and your second spouse died during Yemot HaMashiach, who are you going to be married to? Your first husband or your second husband? Your first wife or your second wife? So, I mean, these are like theoretical questions, which I guess people who are interested in them, you know, want to know what's going to happen. But it'll be this world. And the only difference will be, obviously, the presence of all of these people that had formerly been dead, who will be resurrected. And the fact, according to the Rambam, that the Jewish people will dwell in security, it'll be that messianic vision of, you know, Kemes ve'imazev, the lion, the lamb, peace on earth, and everyone recognizing the kablu kulam et ol malchuto, everyone recognizing God's dominion in the world. And it's not that everybody's going to become Jewish. The Jewish people will be Jewish. I guess in theory people who want to convert can convert. And the non-Jewish people will be the Bnei Noach. And they'll do the mitzvot that they have. And the whole wide world will recognize that that God is the boss, that God is the king. That's the Messianic era. The Rambam says, Ein bein olam azev olam haba l'shibud malchiyot bilvad. The only difference, the primary difference is that peace on earth. The Jewish people will no longer be persecuted. The up will be up and the down will be down and the values will be clear. And that's, according to the Rambam, the Yemot HaMashiach. And for the Rambam, this is important, that people will come back and they'll get some reward in this world, in this world which has been perfected. In this world which has been perfected. That's Yemot HaMashiach. There's a question in the Rambam, what about the people that, Bezus Hashem, Mashiach will come right now. Right now, in the middle of the shir, Alan's going to send us an email, that Alan will post something on the chat that Mashiach has arrived. He read it on Google or on CNN.com or whatever it is. Mashiach will come right now. I mean, it seems unlikely that Alan will know about it in Chicago before Jay and I know about it, because we're only about 10 minutes from Yerushalayim. But let's say that's the case. Mashiach will come right now. The dead will be revived. But what about all of us? We're not dead yet. So do we have to die in order to then be resurrected? Like, is Tchiyat HaMetim a reward? Or is it just a technicality that anybody that happens to be dead, that is deserving of being around during Yemot HaMashiach, will undergo Tchiyat HaMetim so they can be here? But if you're not dead yet, you don't need Tchiyat HaMetim because you're already here, which seems to be the most, you know, like reasonable, the most reasonable explanation of how it will work. But in Yemot HaMashiach, this kind of intermediary period, that's not yet Olam Haba. We use, and other Jewish thinkers use, the term Olam Haba colloquially to mean everything that will happen at the end of times. But according to the Rambam, this period of Yemot HaMashiach, or the Olam HaTchiyah, the resurrected world, or the world in which the resurrected people will come back, is not Olam Haba. You'll live in the Olam HaTchiyah, you'll live in the Yemot HaMashiach. You'll eat, you'll drink, and then you'll die. You'll die a natural death at a certain point, 120, whatever it is. And then when you die, or when you die again, if you're one of the people that have been resurrected, according to the Rambam, then you go to Olam Haba. And that Olam Haba is what he's talking about here in Hilchot Tshuva Perek Chet. That's the Olam Haba of complete abstraction, complete non-physicality, non-corporeality, and that for the Rambam is the ultimate reward. That for the Rambam is the ultimate reward. Right? Where are you in between? Like, where are the people that are dead now? The holy rollers, the tzaddikim, that are dead now, that are waiting around for Tchiyat HaMetim? So this is unclear. Are they like in some intermediate place? You know, for them, does time have the same sense that it has for us? Like, are they just waiting around, or is it like a fast forward to Yemot HaMashiach? These are excellent questions to which I do not have answers. The Rambam says, I mean, he waxes kind of poetic here. Hold on a second. He concludes by saying, "V'zeh shekaru oto chachamim olam haba," the world to come, which implies that it's not the world that we're in now. Lo mipnei she'eino matsui ata. It's not because it doesn't exist. V'zeh ha'olam oved v'achar kach yavo oto ha'olam. Ein davar chen. Ela harehu matsui v'omed. Right? That olam haba, which again exists in some kind of parallel sense, because it's not the physical world. Right? It's not someplace you can point to. It exists like in a different, you know, like, I don't know, Star Trek language, in a different dimension. Because it's not the physical world. So the Rambam says it's there. It's ready. Velo karu olam haba ela mipnei she'otan ha'chayim bo'in lo la'adam achar chayi olam hazeh. She'anu kayemim bo baguf v'nefesh. V'zehu ha'nimtza v'chol adam barishona. And that world is the world without the body. Now, again, to be clear, the Rambam makes it perfectly clear that there's a very high level of speculation here. The Rambam makes it clear that our ability to fully fathom and understand what this is all talking about is extraordinarily limited by our being trapped and being limited by the contours of our existence here. But he ends, just to go back, he ends the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek after his description of Olam Haba and then his enumeration of the 13 principles of faith. He says the following. Before we do that, just add our friend and colleague and teacher, Rabbi Yitzi Blau, who I know some of you study with here on Libby Shiva, he has a very nice little essay in an edition of the Torah Umada Journal, which you can get online at yutorah.org. Maybe I can find you the link. Which you can download online. You can get all of the Torah Umada journals online at yutorah.org. Hold on one second. I'll send you the link. Here you go. It's called Body and Soul, Tchiyat HaMetim and Gilgulim. Reincarnation. You know, is this a Jewish view? Is it not a Jewish view? It seems not to be. It seems not to be the Rambam's position. Alan beat me to it. Anyway, you can download the PDF now. It's a very nice little essay that kind of summarizes some of these things and also gives you the position of some of the other Jewish philosophers. We've only been dealing with the Rambam. The Rambam ends the whole Hakdama LaPerek Chelek by saying the following. Kasher yu kayamim l'adam kol yesodot halalu ve'emunato bahem amitit. When a person has the true proper faith and belief and subscribes to the principles of faith, harehu nichnas bechlal Yisrael. Membership, full membership in the Jewish nation, even though we say Yisrael, afal pi shechato Yisrael, a Jew transgresses either a matter of deed or a matter of creed, he's always a Jew. There's no such thing as conversion from Judaism in halacha. Like a person can go to the church and he can take the sacraments, or he can go to the mosque and profess belief in... The
virus database has been updated.
Pardon me. And he can profess belief in Islam and be recognized as a member of those religions by them, but to us he's still a Jew. He's a wayward Jew, he's a mumar, he's a meshumid, he's a whatever he is, but he's still a Jew. And he only has to do tshuva to be back as a member in good standing. But he's always a Jew. You can't lose your membership, as it were. But when somebody's doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they're believing in what they're supposed to believe in, v'chova la'ahavo, v'lachmol alav, v'chol ma sheziva Hashem otanu, ze al ze min ha'ava v'achva. We're obligated to feel love and brotherhood for such a person. V'afilu asa ma sheyachol liyot min ha'averot, lachmat ta'avato, v'hitkabut yitzro yahara. And even if somebody transgresses because, you know, after all, we're human, and we make mistakes, and we have Yetzirah, and we do all types of things, but that doesn't mean that you're not a Jew. It means that you're a human being who's not yet perfect, but you still are a member of the brotherhood of the Jewish people. Harehu naaseh lefi godel mario v'yeshlo chelek. You still have a share in the world to come. Right? The world to come, I mean, we discussed this in Elul, when we were learning Hilchot Tshuva. What does it mean to be a tzaddik for the Rambam? Is somebody that's mostly good, which means you can still make a lot of mistakes. Don't make mistakes. We don't want you to make mistakes. We don't want you to do Averot. But you're still a member in good standing of the Jewish people. Being a tzaddik doesn't mean perfect. Doesn't mean not ever doing anything wrong. It means getting it mostly right and working to try to get it as right as possible. V'kvar erachti b'dvarim ma'od. The Rambam says, I've gotten off track. I've elaborated on this topic. Remember, the Rambam, the entire lengthy essay, the short book called the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek that discusses all these topics is a side point. He's gone off the track. This is in the context of the commentary on the Mishnah, where he's going line by line explaining what the Mishnah means, and he discusses as a sidebar all of these things. Yatzati min me'inyan chiburi ela she'asiti Kain l'fisha ra'iti shezet to'elet be'emuna l'fisha ani asafti l'cha dvarim rabim mo'ilim u'mifuzarim v'chiburim rabim v'gedolim. So the Rambam says, I took the trouble to take this little side journey in my path of explaining Mishnah by Mishnah because I thought it was important to gather together the authentic beliefs on a variety of related topics so that people should be able to study them. Now for us, we who live in the Rambam's world, we who walk the path that's been trodden on by those that have come before us since the Rambam, so we think about these things in a kind of unified way. But the great innovation of the Rambam, Rambam died a little over 800 years ago, the organization, the marshalling of the sources, bringing everything together in this magisterial way, we forget what an accomplishment that was because we live in the world that the Rambam has made. Because even though many of the things the Rambam is responding to, particularly things in the Mor Nevuchim, particularly things in the Guide to the Perplexed, the Rambam is trying to correlate Jewish belief with Aristotelian philosophy. And even though Aristotelian philosophy is no longer in vogue, even though some of the issues that were raised by Greek philosophy are no longer threatening to us because nobody believes in them anymore. But yet the Rambam's attempt to create a Jewish voice that's neither threatened by general philosophy, can stand on its own two feet and deal with both hands on these issues is itself the again, it's the realm in which we live. It's the backdrop on which we as modern Jews, modern religious folk, who have to face a whole array of other challenges and questions and topics and issues and philosophies. It's the playing field on which we can walk, on which we can stand on our own two feet, in which we can feel that we can look for answers, that we can look inward to the Torah, that we can be in conversation with the general world and not feel that we are unable to make sense of it, unable to contribute to it. These are the accomplishments of Maimonidean philosophy. These are the accomplishments of the Rambam. So what he says, by way of conclusion to this one work that we've been looking at the past number of weeks, I thought that there was value in gathering it up together. It's important for us to remember what an innovation it was when he did that, because we sometimes take that for granted. It's worthwhile reviewing. It's worthwhile reviewing what I've written here. He says, "V'hitbonen b'hem heitev, v'im tashleil otcha machshavatcha shekfar hevante inyanav mipam achat o eser Hashem yodea she b'sheker hishlata otcha." He says, if you think you've read it once, or even 10 times, and you think you fully understand it, you fully get it, you're fooling yourself. And Hashem knows that you're fooling yourself. These are the matters, these are the dvarim ha'omdi berumo sha'olam. These are the matters of great weight and significance and important matters of faith, matters of dogma, matters of belief, matters of reward and punishment and proper motivation and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are things that require vigilance and constant review and examination and deliberation, and don't think that it's the kind of thing you can think about, you know, between the soup and the main course, and, you know, you figured it all out. V'altim aherbo l'fi... לפי שאני לא כתבתי איך שנזדמן לאחר התבוננות ויישוב הדת ועיון בדעות נכונות ובלתי נכונות. So he says, like, you know, I had to think about it. I spent a lot of time thinking about the proper beliefs, the improper beliefs, וסכום מה שצריך להאמין מהם בירב בטענות ראיות על כל עניין ועניין, ומעט השם אשל ל... I'm going to go on now, I'm going to explain the Mishnayot like I've been doing, but thank God, you know, I've been guided by the, proper manner in which to walk on the Derech HaEmet, on the path of truth. And the path of truth is the path of thinking about these and related matters. Just by way of conclusion, I would say two things. Next Zman in the Web Yeshiva, we'll have a course looking at, I think it's called something like the Method and Meaning of Torah Shebaal Peh, and we'll take as our main text the sister text to this, the Rambam's Hakdama LePerush HaMishnayot. I mentioned by way of introduction to this series, that in the Perush HaMishnayot, his commentary on the Mishnah, there are a few places, this one being one of the most significant, where the Rambam took these sidebars and he elaborated on a topic. He has an introduction to the entirety of the Perush HaMishnah, which is his history of what the Torah Shebaal Peh is and how it works. So we're going to be having a series looking at that. How the halakha works, how it develops, everything that happened from the time Moshe came down from the mountain, at least up until the time of the Rambam, perhaps even further if we're lucky. I'll also be giving a course, something a little new and a little unusual for us on Rabbi Yeshiva, a Jewish history course on topics in Jews and modernity, a survey of some topics in modern Jewish history. And I would just say by way of conclusion, although, you know, some of you have been learning with us for a long time, and others of you are either new to Web Yeshiva or new to my teaching here, it is, of course, always a great zchut and honor to be able to learn Torah with people wherever they are, either in person or virtually, and it, of course, was a pleasure to get to get to know you and to learn with you, and I hope that we will stay in touch. I will put my email up in the chat, and of course, be in touch. Laila Tov.